Hello and welcome to Opening Arguments Q&A 40. Oh, what a nice. I think, Andrew, you have to drink an entire 40 because of that. What do you think?
Well, instead of an entire 40, what I have with me is Petrichor Quasar. So get a good look at that. That's a
green screen's messing it up a little, but I think we can see it.
Yep. So that is a it's the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's Speyside special release. I don't understand
a lot of those words, but
Speyside. You know that? Yeah, no, it's tasty. I've got my precious little cinnamon bun glass.
There you go. And I've got water because it's 3 o'clock. And I also, I kept our promise.
3 o'clock is an excellent time for whiskey.
Oh, I'm trying to get the text. Oh, you can't quite see it. But anyway, I kept the promise to make the Rudy Beach scene my backdrop. Yeah. But there's no good image of just that. Like, I'd need somebody to find a good one for me.
I just want to point out that you have green screened a green screen behind you.
Yeah, it's double green screen. You know, I could have just made it our... I could have made it like our background. Actually.
Our background, like the wood paneling. Yeah, well, you know, next time.
I could do it right now.
You could do. Could do it right now. Who needs to answer questions?
Yeah, let's see if it'll take 2 seconds. Let's see if it works.
All right. there we go.
But then, can I change mine again, or am I stuck?
Yeah, no, you should be able to go back to. Okay. I was gonna wear my sister got me a Make America Rake Again t-shirt for Christmas. Yeah? So
I can go back to this. Oh, yeah, here we go.
That's perfect.
I think that's better for everybody.
I agree.
Yeah, now we're green screening. It is an ugly mess that you're seeing on screen, but that's okay.
There's nothing more Rudy Giuliani than an ugly mess on the screen.
Yeah.
So
let us know if anyone suffers any like seizures or bad health effects because of the just ugliness on screen. But if not, we'll go with it. I'm excited to answer some questions. There's a few things going on in the world, Andrew, I think.
There are a couple.
Yeah. Well, let's find out.
I started digging into the Trump reply brief today. I mean, both briefs I looked at, but like the impeachment, we're going to talk about this. I would assume it will be the main segment on this week's show, but you never know what's going to – well, actually, you do know this, right? Like, it used to be when you and I would do Q&As on a Tuesday, it's like, well, we're obviously covering this on Thursday unless Trump does something horrible on Wednesday, which of course he will.
Yeah.
And now it's just kind of like, yeah, probably the world isn't going to blow up on Wednesday. So,
yeah. Yeah. Gosh, I'm just there's so much going on tech-wise that I can't. I'll stop myself from talking about. But there's so many trade-offs. StreamYard is good, but this is the other alternative. Like this is the alternative. Look at that. That's just too intense. I can't take it.
No,
I can't take it. So we got to do this, and then we got
max
all this
headroom for
I can't crop the screen, but we can get the add to stream. We can get the screenshot going. Our first question, Teresa Gomez, what's the most ticklish spot on your body? Hey, we have no choice. We have to answer Teresa's questions. I'm pretty ticklish guy, honestly. I think everywhere. I think what happens is like if Lydia's going to start doing the tickling, then my whole body goes into shields up.
And then
she's – the liability's on her from that. Is there any legal equivalent to this, Andrew? Like, it's like the castle doctrine. Once Lydia goes in for tickling, there's no, I might break her arm accidentally. There's nothing I can do about it.
I think we have the overly sensitive plaintiff doctrine might apply here. But
no, once she takes on the risk of tickling, cause, and also my neck, like she'll do the neck. Like if she does the neck, even accidentally, you know, then I do the clamp, like, and then she just doesn't get her hand back. I just keep her hand for the rest of the day.
Those are some impressive neck muscles.
No, it's just, once I get in that ticklish mode, my whole body is just like, chink, you know, like I just, yeah.
For me, it really varies by person. So, it's an individuated kind of thing. So,
yeah.
I don't know that there's any one good spot. Huh?
Lydia's not ticklish. It's frustrating.
Oh, well, then
especially for the kids.
That must suck in, you know, tickle fights then.
Yeah, exactly. Because
she's like, you're just itching me and this is not pleasant.
Yeah, she's a nuclear power and I'm like some poor country with no weapons. Like, that's what happens. I got nothing. All right, let's find.
All right, thank you, Teresa. We love you.
Let's find. Oh, here we go. Here's this question's got a lot of hearts. I'm glad people voted on their favorite questions. Sakashite Fukasumi, in the Truman Show, it seems clear that the studio is committing many kinds of tort against Truman. But if only Truman himself has standing to bring suit, and he doesn't even know that he has been tortified, does the studio just get away with it? How recently have you watched that movie, Andrew? Because it is so fucking good. I rewatched it like a few years back.
So it has been a long time since I've seen it. I remember kind of like being on – we watched when I was in law school, we sort of did a like side-by-side of The Truman Show and what was the Tobey Maguire TV Reese Witherspoon?
I don't think I saw that. Is that back when they used to make every movie in pairs? Like,
Armageddon? It was very, very similar. Yeah. Pleasantville is what it was called.
I don't think I saw that.
Yeah, you should.
Is it any good?
I remember it as being good, but you know.
Well, The Truman Show really predicted a lot. It's remarkable. It's incredible.
Yeah. So in any event, it's been a long time since I've seen The Truman Show. I thought favorably of it, and I would like to see it again. Answering Sakashite's question, the way around this is you would petition the court as a third party to appoint a guardian ad litem for Truman. Right. When somebody can't represent their own interests in court, we typically think of this as like children get a guardian ad litem appointed. But you can do it for anybody. Right. You could certainly do it for an adult who's being brainwashed and bamboozled and is stuck inside a dome. That's how I would approach that. And yes, there are many. It's Christoph, right, is the producer.
I don't know.
Anyway. Christoph is committing many, many torts.
Oh, you mean within the movie?
Truman.
Oh, Ed Harris's character?
Yeah.
I think it's Ed Harris, right? Yeah.
It's Ed Harris. Yeah. We could just call him Ed Harris.
Sure. Yeah. I don't remember character names except Truman. I don't That's all I got.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, Matthew Cravat in the comments is saying that WandaVision is Marvel's Pleasantville plus Truman Show combo. So I like those characters, and that looks really quirky and weird. So I'm going to go check it out.
I haven't yet. We'll see. My threshold for Marvel stuff is everyone has to say it's the best thing they've ever seen. I'll see it and think it's like, okay.
And Black Panther was really good.
Yeah, I like Black Panther.
Yeah.
Compelling
villain. All right.
We got one from who else? General Contact Unit Problem Child.
Woo!
A few months back, some leftists were claiming, the president could use the pandemic as an excuse to do an emergency executive order to put everyone in the U.S. on Medicare, i.e. Medicare for All by executive order. Is this as BS as most one weird trick plans?
So I have to tell you, I did not I saw this when it came up, and I did not look into it. And I think that this is the provision that, right? Like, so Medicare has a variety of qualifications, and so I think that there is like in the same way that we talked about how the state of was it Arizona? I think it was the state of Wisconsin, actually, right? Right. It was Wisconsin issued guidance that said, we have determined from the executive branch that everybody is really a shut-in, right? And so, therefore, you have access to the shut-in ability to vote by mail. And they started this in the primary when there was sort of the battle going back and forth.
Makes
total sense, right? So I think it would be an analogous provision. So it would be less BS than most one weird trick plans, right? So something that would enable like via executive order to say everybody in the United States qualifies as being a shut-in and therefore, you know, is eligible for Medicare. The reason I haven't looked into it is because if I were chief of staff to Joe Biden, like I would say, all right, we're not going to do that one, right? Like,
or is it the kind of thing? Maybe you wait until you've tried everything else, you know, Congress has failed you, then just start firing off executive orders.
Well, that's right. That is exactly right. Right. I'm not saying, and in fact, what I think of as sort of the long game for Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and some others is you try and play by the rules roughly defined right now. And, you know, if you go a year and it's like procedurally, I'm not accomplishing anything, then, you know, you just kind of throw up your hands and you're like, look, we tried to play by the rules for a year and we're not going to have no government. Right. Like, I think even Joe Manchin is sort of on board with, there will be governance. And I think you build that case of like, hey, Joe, like we tried. Right. And that's where something like this would come in. Obviously, you would immediately I don't need to tell you what the strategy would be, right? Like the Republicans would immediately go to district court in, the Central District of Texas, get a judge to issue a nationwide injunction. It would go up to the Fifth Circuit and then go to the Supreme Court, right? So, you know, you'd be facing a pretty steep uphill challenge in terms of being able to implement it. But
reminds me, and Alice sang Three Cheers for the End of the Trans Ban, by the way. Yeah, this reminds me of like how you saw the I think it was probably a Fox News graphic that was like Biden is, you know, governing by fiat and shows the executive orders. And I love how, you know, President Trump instituted a whole bunch of horrible bullshit through executive orders and then Biden comes and undoes them. And then they point to that as like, look at all these executive orders doing. I thought you didn't like executive orders. It's like, yeah, he had to undo them. There's no limit to the bad faith on that. It's so funny.
And let me point out the double bad faith, which is the same people that decry government by executive order. And look, there is a legitimate argument there, right? Like I would like not to have all of this sort of devolving.
Oh, yeah.
To the executive.
You mean in a different era when the government worked? But yeah, it doesn't work anymore.
But those people, the same people who decry governing by fiat, by executive order, are also opposed to blowing up the filibuster.
Yep.
And it's like, all right. So basically what you're saying is, and this is what they're saying, right? We don't want the government to do anything. And like when 45% of the country believes that, like, you know, government can't solve problems, government is the problem. Yeah. Like, then, yeah, all roads lead to the government doing nothing.
I know. It's such a big problem because I think a lot of people want the government to do stuff and don't understand why it doesn't. You know, they don't understand the structural problems like the filibuster and the Senate giving too much power to essentially the tyranny of the minority in Republicans. They don't understand why nothing happens. And then Democrats get blamed for nothing happening. It's really frustrating. Let's go to our next question. This is another one that could be a deep dive if we haven't done one already. Ding dong, the Trump is gone. What is /are the legal hurdles for DC statehood? Is there anything that an angry citizen can try to use to sue to prevent DC from becoming a state? And what arguments will be thrown out in opposition in Congress? So lots there.
It just has to be ratified by the Senate, right? Like it is that there, and it only requires 51 votes, although presently, procedurally, that to get to that vote requires cloture, which requires 60 votes.
Oh, okay.
It's why starting with DC statehood was really brilliant. And you and I talked about this. I think AG and I talked about this on the cleanup on aisle 45 that drops tomorrow. DC is like 99-1 in favor of statehood, right? Yeah. And they have been forever. Mm-hmm. In Puerto Rico, let me be honest with you, it's split 50-50. Now, I should say this. It was split 50-50 pre-Trump, right? They would poll, they would take non-binding referenda every couple of years. I imagine it's probably swung considerably towards statehood in the era post-Trump of, like, you know, calling them a shithole country and refusing to send hurricane relief and that sort of thing. But prior to that, it really was split 50-50. And so when you would take polls based on how the polls were based on how the questions were asked, just sort of the variance, it would sort of waver between 47 and 53, right? Mm. So people who said, look, Puerto Rico doesn't even want to be a state could point to a dozen polls. People who said, look, Puerto Rico wants to be a state could point to a dozen polls. It was split. I think that the idea of you start where it's totally unambiguous, and then you see what the state, no pun intended, is in Puerto Rico is really the right way to go. As for the arguments, I want to tell you that how bad these arguments are. There is only one good argument, and it's not a good argument, right? The one procedural argument is that the Constitution specifies some amount of land to be set aside as a district, right?
Oh, okay.
But that's super easy, right?
Yeah, you just shrink it to the size of like a building.
You shrink it to the size of a cube, right? Yeah. Like this 1 centimeter cube, and you put a little like monument up there, right? And there are no permanent residents, so there's nothing to worry about. And it gets rid of all the administrative problems. So anything you hear administratively on, well, you know, there must be an executive district. No, there must not be, right? There's nothing to prevent that. Remember that, like, any originalists, like the founding fathers, kind of thought that, like, you know, Congress would you'd live at home and you'd, you know, take your horse and buggy in the summer and meet in D.C. for a couple months and then go back home. Right. Like, they did not anticipate a permanent residence of a million people that were disenfranchised.
Yeah.
And certainly for the white people or the white males with property, they would not have wanted them to be disenfranchised.
A lot of people are asking, and I think it's worth going into, purely logically speaking, like, forget everything that's happened. If you're just trying to look at the situation rationally, I don't know that it makes a whole lot of – like, conservatives are making the argument, and I think it's an argument of convenience, that D.C. should just be another city in Maryland or something, you know, and it's interesting. What do you think of that? Is that an argument that has any legal merit? I mean, it's hard to feel like – it's hard to not feel like each side is going to just try to argue the thing that's more convenient to them. Like, if DC can just be a state, can any big city, you know, in a state that feels like it's, I mean, I get, yeah, I don't know. What do you think about all that?
Yeah, look, there are a couple of things. There are a couple of things here, right? Obviously, merging DC back into Maryland would not give Democrats 2 new senators, mm-hmm. right? But it would give them 2 to 3 new members of Congress, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like – in other words, if the debate is, right, do we add 2 to 3 Democratic members of Congress and 2 Democratic senators and enfranchise a million people, or, right, do we do all of that only minus the senators? Like, I'm – like – this is the best debate we've had in 4 years, right? Yeah. So, you know, but ultimately, like, I think Maryland doesn't want the land, right? Like, you can't. That's the difference. Is that it from a political calculus, right? I don't know what Maryland's Republican governor Larry Hogan would do, but the very Democratic Maryland state legislature would say, yeah, well, we decline. Right. To accept the land. So you can't force Maryland to take it back.
That's interesting. OK, let's get to
Alice Ashton says, don't put your land on me, which I like it. Yeah. And Tony says the D.C. population is more like 700,000. Yeah, it fluctuates a lot. Right. Because of school and commuters and that sort of thing. So I will take that maybe the rest of the greater environs are already in Maryland or Virginia. That certainly could be the case.
So here's a nice question that is kind of like an old-fashioned deep dive type of question. Ooh. Bear the Bull asks, how do originalists handle the concept of incorporation? It seems clear that people didn't originally think the 14th Amendment should force states to abide by the Bill of Rights. This is reinforced by the piecemeal way that amendments got incorporated. It seems like an originalist should reject the D.C. Heller outcome just on the idea of state and local rights. Or do they just ignore the problem because it's all a grift to implement right-wing ideology? And who cares anyway?
So, I mean, you kind of gave away the answer at the end there. But I have to do a little bit of legal pedantry here. The reason that the first case, test case that was brought was D.C. versus Heller is because that didn't require the incorporation of the Second Amendment to the states. That's the District of Columbia, right? So there was a subsequent decision called, I believe, McDonald versus Chicago or McDonald versus – but in any event, right, once D.C. v. Heller was crammed in, then there was a subsequent – I think 2008 decision that incorporated the Second Amendment out to the states. That could have been a legitimate constitutional issue as well, right? In sort of looking at the contours of the incorporation doctrine and applying the same logic that like failed to incorporate the Fifth Amendment right to a grand jury, for example. I could see an academically honest Supreme Court would not have come up with D.C. v. Heller. So it's a weird, but like, you know, if all of a sudden you had D.C. v. Heller and it was bad precedent and you had an academically honest Supreme Court, I could see them coming out the other way in the McDonald decision, right? And saying like, oh yeah, well, fine. But that right is not incorporated out to the states. And oh boy, what an interesting universe that would have made. That didn't happen. As for your – so that was my pedantry on the grammar of the question. In terms of the gravamen of the question, right, how do originalists handle the incorporation doctrine? It really depends, right? There's an obvious – there's an obvious answer, and that is very, very poorly, right? About as poorly as they handle an analysis of looking at Brown versus Board of Education. And by the way, again, not to plug my new show twice, but like I rant for about 20 minutes about originalism on tomorrow's Cleanup on Aisle 45. It's a lot of stuff you guys have heard as OA listeners already. But we talked about Joe Biden added Jack Goldsmith, Harvard Law professor Jack Goldsmith, to his bipartisan commission on reforming the judiciary. And Jack Goldsmith is a member of the fucking Federalist Society. So, you know, in terms of are we just going to cheerlead everything Biden does? Like I was 30 minutes of swearing on the next Aisle 45 because Jack Goldsmith is an originalist champion. He wrote, you know, numerous pieces about how wonderful it was to have Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court. And what if he's a longstanding member of the Federalist Society and right. Why you would put – right? Like Donald Trump didn't put me on any judicial commissions over the last 4 years. Why you would put the enemy on your commission, I'm stunned. I don't understand it. You could have had a bipartisan commission that is not right-wing activists that are trying to destroy our judiciary. That's anyway, really weird. Sorry. Yeah, didn't mean to rant on that in the middle, but want more on originalism, you get 20 minutes on aisle 45 tomorrow.
This show is Andrew Yells at Originalism. I mean, that's key to this. That's core to this show. What would it look like under an originalist theory? I mean, should that incorporation thing always confuses me as well. Like, should we have had no rights actually?
so here I'm going to do – because this is the mothership, I'm going to do the thing that I elided over on aisle 45, which is I said, I'm not going to get into all of your different flavors of originalism. Mm. You guys can handle it, right? You are OG OA listeners, and you know that among the originalists are several varieties of textualists, right? There is the Gorsuch variant that says it means what the plain language means, regardless of how that was interpreted at the time. And that would be the only position, right? Neil Gorsuch is the only member of the court's originalist wing that has a legitimate claim to be able to defend incorporation, right? Because he could say, right, the 14th Amendment says no state shall deny to any person equal protection of the laws, and denying equal protection of the laws, the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. That means the provisions of the Bill of Rights apply to the states, whether the people who passed the 14th Amendment thought it did or not, right? Every other flavor of originalism, particularly Scalia's originalism, that requires you to say the words are the plain meaning of the words at the time that they were written, yeah, right? Like, and again, you know, we talked about this, right? Like, that meant torture was totally cool with Nino, right? Would have to look at it and say, and this is the knockdown evidence, right? That the same people who voted for the 14th Amendment voted for, right, the D.C. Schooling Act that had segregated public schools, right? Like, it was very, very clear that they did not intend for the 14th Amendment to do anything other than patch gaps in the 13th Amendment in terms of enfranchising former slaves, right? Because both political parties really, really wanted black votes and were not great on other issues. If you're an originalist and the 14th Amendment means what it did in 1869, I do not see how you can make a case for the incorporation of the First Amendment, right? And you would have to say, like, yeah, Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. But, like, if Maryland wants to and Maryland doesn't have a First Amendment, then, you know, move to a state with a First Amendment.
Yeah, that's what was so confusing about it to me when we first, you know, the listeners and I first started learning about this from you. That is mind-blowing that's kind of how it would have originally been intended. We can take a brief respite on a more fun question here.
All right.
AB asks, sometimes on your show you invite folks to sue you and then mention Opening Arguments LLC, a Maryland limited liability company. Is there some legal trouble or hurdles you can get into if you don't specify the fact that you're in Maryland or what type of organization you are? Yeah, what's going on there?
So here's why I do
just
that.
Because you don't want to be sued yourself. You want
right,
to be sued
right.
As,
yeah,
you want to drag me into it. Yes, yeah, son of a.
Exactly. No. So the whole point of being an LLC, right, is the LL part, right? A limited liability company, right? And so what that means is that any adverse judgment that the podcast production company that produces this show would run against the podcast, but would not run against me or Thomas personally, right? And so that's why I always specify, feel free to sue Opening Arguments Media LLC. And then I add a Maryland limited liability company based in Towson, Maryland, because I think it sounds funny. And also because I mostly do contract work, right? Like I do much more drafting than I do litigating. And in the introductory paragraph in which you define the parties in a contract, it will often say, this is a contract by and between Thomas Smith, a person a real person residing at blah, blah, blah in California, and Opening Arguments Media LLC, a Maryland limited liability company with its principal place of business at 28 East Susquehanna Avenue, Suite 206, Towson, Maryland. Right. So that's kind of how it got run together.
Oh, I have one where I get to use my limited expertise. I'll refer people to Serious Inquiries Only. I recorded one with Phil Ferguson on this. But Jamal Jackson asks, can there be a discussion about the GameStop stock? How is it legal to purchase more shorts than what is available? How is it legal to not allow 40% of Americans to purchase stocks? A lot there. I have to tackle this because it's so frustrating to see, especially because our entire side essentially, that I see believes an incorrect information on this. Everybody keeps saying the hedge fund shorted 140% of the stock, and that's just not true. Yeah. I mean, let me try to. And I want to describe what actually happened, but it's not a defense of hedge funds. I just hate the fact, you get stuck in this position where you like.
Now you know how I felt every other day for the last 4 years.
If you defend facts, I just want to explain facts of what goes on. Oh, you're a big fucking hedge fund guy, huh? It's like, no, just. Okay, pretend there's a company with one stock, okay? And I short that stock. That's pretty easy. I borrow that stock, I sell it to Andrew. And that's the shorting process. The idea is when the stock goes down, I buy it back at a lower price and then I return it. I've made money. Now, there's one stock total in this scenario. I short the stock, sell it to Andrew. Now, let's say someone else wants to short the same stock. They borrow it from Andrew and do it again. And now the stock has been shorted 200% of the float. That does not mean that anybody invented imaginary stock. It's not illegal. It's not a sustainable position, by the way. I mean, it's not good that GameStop had 140% of their whatever the figure. I've seen different ones, but 140 is the one I thought was accurate. That 140% of the float was shorted is not a good thing. That's not stable, and that does lead to the circumstances we saw where you can create a short squeeze and then, there's all this havoc. But there's nothing nefarious about it. It just means that a ton of people, including that hedge fund, thought the stock was going to go down, so they shorted the hell out of it back and forth to each other. There's nothing that, they didn't invent extra stock. That's just how it works. As for the second part, which is how is it legal to not allow 40% of Americans to purchase stocks? There, I have no idea. And I don't know, Andrew, if we're going to be able to do a follow-up on that, but the stuff that Robinhood did and that some of these companies did where they're preventing people from trading certain stocks in certain ways – that I have no idea. What do you have anything to say on that preliminarily?
I do have something to say, which is I checked in with Ace Associate Morgan Stringer today, and she's going to come on the show for next Tuesday's show. Everybody loves it when Morgan is on, and she understands not only kind of the general law of every, but specifically has dug into some of the lawsuits against Robinhood. She knows this stuff, and I am very, very excited. I will tell you, the way in which I get through life is by, not duplicating effort. So I know literally not a goddamn thing about this.
You can be the me.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
She'll be the Andrew. Yeah,
you and I will we'll be the Thomas. Me. I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, there's a lot to that. Yeah, I'm curious to learn about that too. I mean, obviously there are going to be arguments that they have to maintain enough, cash to blah blah blah. But it still seems crazy. I don't know. It still seems like it can't quite be right. But we'll see. I wonder. Wait, is she going to break down the class action suit? Are you going to break it down? Somebody's got to do it.
She's gonna break it down.
Jeez, Morgan, I hope. This is going to be a lot of work. We're going to need to do multiple episodes on this. I don't see how we're squeezing that in. But yeah, I've seen reporting either way. It's the clearinghouse that did it. Oh, it's the not. They didn't necessarily. We'll see. Don't you think there should be, if there isn't already, some congressional investigation into what's going on here just to see if we need, if there's some safeguards that can be put in?
Yeah, there's no doubt that there will be.
Right? Okay.
I mean, too many people on both sides are interested in it. Yeah.
This one has a lot of hearts. It is a related question, but this is good. Thomas May asks, let's say the filibuster explodes and DC is made a state. Excuse me. How soon would their senators be seated? That's really interesting.
Ooh,
I guess we have precedent of whenever a state has ever happened.
We do, and I let me say this. I don't know. I think immediately, right? I mean, and I will tell you that DC has been electing shadow senators and a shadow delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, for as long as I can remember, right? So in other words, it is not as though the infrastructure is not in place. To see, but you wouldn't even need to have an election, right? The voters have already said, I vote for X person to serve as my representative in the Senate in the case that DC ever becomes a state. Wow. So I think the fact that they've done that, look, like there are two ways to interpret that. Number one, they could have done that like to, you know, make people feel better. But number two, they could have done that for precisely this kind of situation to be able to see it immediately. So I will tell you what, I'll make this promise here on the air. I want to answer this question in the A block on wow. Thursday's show. So we're gonna do that. How much time I can devote to it will depend upon how crazy things get over the next 2 days. But yeah, great question. I love it. I think it's almost immediately.
Now we're out of stuff to talk about, Andrew, because Trump's not president, so there's no more. Now we got 18 shows planned today just from the questions from today. See? So much to talk about. And it's more constructive and fun. I'm so happy that Trump's not president. It's the best.
And it feels like, I mean
– it almost – Andrew, it almost makes me regret our – what you always say, Xanatos Gambit or whatever plan of supporting Elizabeth Warren because we knew she would lose to Trump and therefore would ensure 4 more years of Trump – to make us more money on the show. It almost makes me regret that whole gambit we pulled off that didn't even so fucking dumb. Sorry, that was just me responding to one specific idiot tweeter.
To one guy,
2 years ago. Or a year ago.
I will say this, like we have had, I mean, the number of people who have said, hey, I can finally listen to the show again.
I know, like, it's a lot.
The existential dread is gone. Yeah. Is there. And like the numbers seem to bear that out. Like our listenership has ticked up. And I don't think anybody who was here for watching the Trump dumpster fire is like, oh, well, you know, now I don't give a shit, right? Like now everything's fine.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah, it's all solved.
Yeah.
It eminent domain is imminent, everybody. Indeed. It's both imminent and eminent.
Imminent.
We'll find a way.
And imminent.
Right. Why Satan? Why not Satan? Asks, is it even legal for a president today to deny a citizen the ability to re-enter the country for something they were not found guilty for, i.e. stopping citizens from coming back if they might have COVID-19? Couldn't this be greatly abused if the president can just do it alone? I think this is a very important question. I don't know that's liable to happen at all, Andrew, but there's criticism of Biden, especially if you listen to that Daily episode, that to keep these new strains out of the country that might not be here yet, or one of them might be, but anyway, it might be valuable to do a travel ban. And then we did some sort of travel ban, and then the problem is somehow it's only on citizens from that country, which is the most fucking backwards, stupid thing, because COVID does not care if you're a citizen of that country or not. Yeah. What matters is stopping all travel between two countries. It looks like it could be an important and defensible policy, but granting that, is it even possible? Is there just a legal hurdle that makes it so you couldn't even do that if we all decided it was the best policy to do?
Two things come into play here, right? Number one, the president has broad statutory authority to control the borders, to control entry and exit from the country, to place limits on immigration, to place limits on temporary visas and all sorts of things. That is bounded by basic due process rights that are due U.S. citizens. So, for example, right, if you had an executive order that said we're gonna prevent any traffic from XYZ countries except for returning citizens, and then returning citizens would then immediately, right, be processed at a separate center, placed into quarantine, right, able to, you know, entitled to A, B, and C kind of process, I think that would stand up, right? Like, remember,
so you could set up like a quarantine process at least, which would be fine, right?
Yeah, absolutely, right? And look, quarantine, right? This is Jacobson versus Massachusetts, 1906, right? Like, quarantine, like mass vaccination, right? Like, those are plenary powers to, you know, protect citizens that it's clear are within the government's ambit, so long as, you know, it's done for an appropriate purpose. What struck down the first travel ban was that Trump's lawyers were idiots. And they were like, well, nobody coming in from one of them there Muslim countries can come in. Right. And there was no due process if you were an American citizen. And like, that's a problem. So as long as there's due process, right. And this gets back into the why originalism is stupid. Right. Like, what's the process and how much of it are you doing? There you go. So
I've been listening to the show off and on. I don't listen to every episode. I just think, look, there may be policy arguments or practical arguments about like, oh, it's already here, blah, blah, blah. Set all that aside. If you are going to do a travel ban, like if, you know, maybe there's another – this won't be the end of new strains, by the way. Maybe there's another strain in another country or here, by the way, but maybe in another country that we're trying to stop from getting here. If you're going to do a travel ban, you got to fucking actually do it or don't bother. There's no point. It's frustrating to me. Either do it the right way by, like you're saying, allow a due process and a quarantine process for citizens returning, or just don't do it. Because then if you do it halfway, it just looks – I don't know. It's frustrating to me. It's not going to do anything. But
agreed. You know, that's agreed. Just my
feeling. We got more. Sorry. Well, we'll see. We might again be referring to the next episode. Let's see. Andrew slowly explaining political philosophy is my kink. That's a longstanding patron name, by the way. Yeah. Is the Reddit Wall Street
Bets? By the way, I have no idea who that is.
So. Yeah.
Isn't that the story of my life? So.
Is the r/ Wall Street Bets Reddit scheme to wreck hedge funds a legal kind of informal coordination? Can the hedge funds sue for civil damages? How much is Robinhood's reaction a sensible business move, and how much of it – or how much is it protecting members of the elite financial trading class? Obviously, a lot of that's going to, you know, apply to the next episode. Is there anything there that you want to answer now that's kind of unique to the issues we'll be talking about on Tuesday's episode?
Yeah. What I will say is the ability to sue a third party for coordinated efforts to bring down your stock, I mean, I don't even know what that theory would be, right? Like,
That seems tough to prove. Like, every single person would be like, I just bought the stock. What are you talking about? You know, right?
Well, I mean, so yes, you have the intent issue. And boy, I will give you another spoiler on my conversation with Morgan earlier this morning. But like the idiocy behind the Reddit folks is something to behold. Like you're gonna enjoy. This is not like I assumed
you're
quite wrongly
destroyed online. The second you say anything against that Reddit, Andrew, people go after you like crazy.
Well, you know, like hey, as long as they share out the show, that's let's get 100,000 hate listens.
Look,
off of
plenty
Reddit.
Of people are just in it trying to spend a little money to fuck over a hedge fund, and I get it.
And that's the thing is that if everybody involved had just said, hey, I'm willing to spend – I don't know if you could make the numbers work, right? Like if they'd said, I'm willing to spend $500 to wreck a hedge fund, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to view that as $500 down the toilet, right? Yeah. Like that
– In fairness, that is how a lot of people felt about it. That's how a lot of people did it. But also
– But also
a lot of people wanted to make money off of those people by pretending to be part of that cause.
And that's where – You know, this is going to be.
You know, Phil said it on my show, and I encourage people
potato.
if you want to break down
show,
that show, and then also opening arguments Tuesday. I'm excited for that with Morgan. But one thing Phil said was, I think he said he would bet that not only other hedge funds, but even the original hedge fund that they were trying to fuck over will make money after all this is said and done. That's what he said, based on the fact that they can retake their short positions. You know. Once the stock was at 400 or whatever the hell it was, they could short it again and make all the – it's already down a ton. Like it – anyway, we'll see.
I don't think – but I'm just thinking about the math. Wouldn't they have way more exposure, right? Because when you have a million shares at 2 and it goes to 400, right, that's how you get fucked.
Yeah. But you can cover your short position. So they would have – he is arguing that – I'm skeptical of some of the numbers coming out. I've seen, you know, stuff here and there that like they can mislead people, and the worst thing that happens is they pay a very small FEC fine or something. So I honestly – this is another question I have if you guys – Morgan, that cup. I just saw the cup. That is phenomenal. Hold on. Do that again.
Does it go through right now?
Whoa, nice. That's magic. Anyway, I would not be surprised.
That is my very green cup, so there's a Cybertron.
If I were the hedge fund, what I would do is tell everyone I lost a billion, zillion, trillion dollars and my company's ruined. That's what I would do. Because then maybe people will let up. And then so what I was going to say is there's no way – and Phil, you know, said this as well – there's no way the hedge fund didn't cover their position. So you can mitigate your risk by taking out options to buy the stock at a certain price point, so that you limit the otherwise infinite potential
risk
for loss.
Yeah.
And so he is very skeptical of the losses that they're saying they had. And my theory – he didn't say this, but my theory is like maybe they're just misleading people to get them people off their back. Like I honestly don't know.
Seems very plausible. So.
All right. Well, here we go. It's a not stocks related – not stonks related question. Stormy Decisis asks, ignoring the question of whether the pardoner can be sued, is it possible for a pardon itself to be libelous? Whoa. What if Joe Biden pardoned Ted Cruz for any and all lascivious acts performed on sheep and or goats? Oh, you missed an opportunity to pardon him for being the Zodiac Killer.
The Zodiac Killer.
Oh my God. How fucking funny and awesome would that be if Biden pardoned Ted Cruz for being the Zodiac Killer? I mean, it's not a federal crime. You'd have to find some way to do it.
I'm sure there's a
there's
federal
probably
crime
federal. Yeah, yeah, you're right. There's probably
for
federal
any
crime.
And all federal offenses associated with the fact that you're the Zodiac Killer. Yeah,
that would be so awesome.
This is where we've talked about on the other side how the notion that the pardon has to be accepted is overblown, right? Like what that means is it's up to you to present it in court. But here is the area where I think that would be an absolute defense, right? Like Joe Biden would go into court and be like, well, hey, you didn't have to accept it. I mean, if you're not the Zodiac Killer, then you could have just let it go by the wayside, Ted.
Oh, man.
What aren't you telling us? I love it. Great question, Stormy.
Yeah. Stormy's got another question. Right. Look.
Oh, my gosh.
The free market of ideas, at least within the Patreon thread, is real because
a rising tide lifts all Stormy.
No, I'm saying Stormy is the 1% in terms of question asking. You heart the questions you want to see in the world, as Gandhi said or whatever. And see, we got 20 questions or 20 hearts there. I mean, this is Stormy's on a roll. My question – I haven't even read this. When it has that many hearts, I don't even screen it. I just look at it.
Okay.
I've just opened myself up for a horrible pranking.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think we're about to hit it as I'm looking at the screen here.
My question is whether the law recognizes consensual harm in BDSM, which stands for Bondage Discipline Spider-Man or so I'm told. So if I consent to be burned with a candle and someone burns me with a candle, are they still committing battery? Does the law recognize safe words? Like if I said my safe word but candle dude kept candling, would that become illegal? I guess what I'm asking is what are the odds that I'll be standing in front of a judge explaining that I clearly said pistachio before the oil gentleman by the name of Rusty Speargun picked up the pleasure whip? There's a lot of great law there.
Yeah, and also like this continues the move towards all of our products being just, you know, thinly veiled R-rated productions, right? Like we had Teresa reading the Mies Commission report on your NES stream.
Jeez,
that's
my heart couldn't take it.
So to the extent that Stormy's question has an answer, it would be in the concept of assumption of risk, right? And the analogy that you would make, and here I'm being 100% serious. If I were representing you against Candle Dude, the argument that you would make is the same argument for boxing, right? Like if I come up to you and start beating the crap out of you, you get to sue me. Mm-hmm. If we do it at Madison Square Garden and Don King gets paid $100 million, then it's fine. So
that guy's not still alive, is he?
Is Don King? I think
Don King
is still alive.
Holy shit, is Don King still alive?
I think so.
Wow, I haven't thought about that guy in a long time.
Oh, well.
Huh. Anyway.
There you
go.
Well,
I think this goes against somebody said in the UK, I believe you cannot consent to assault. Well, I know they've held UFCs in the UK, so I'm pretty sure in some way you can consent to an assault.
Yeah, maybe maybe there's some kind of like, you know, international waters that they're doing, or I gotta look into it.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some amount of this like within Me Too conversations of like, yeah, how can you, you know, if and I think a lot of times it's being brought up as a, you know, a bad faith way to be against Me Too and consent laws and stuff, because people, oh, how are you gonna engage in any consensual. What is it? Something Spider-Man? What is it? I already forgot what it was.
Yeah,
Spider-Man. Bondage, discipline, Spider-Man.
I'm gonna call it BDSM is all Spider-Man for me from now on. So,
yeah. I mean, there's definitely some interesting questions there. Like, obviously, there could be gray area. You know, like there isn't everything in life where like somebody consents to something, then their partner goes too far, and then it'll be a tough case, you know, like an edge case. And there's always edge cases, but like, you know, so for the most part, you think this is something that, you know, legally will be handled within that boxing exception.
Look, it, and I think this dovetails with what you just said. In general, the principle of talk more about the thing that you want to do before you do it is a pretty damn good legal and moral principle.
Well, let's go to this question here. California employment, work accident, or litigation questions, call or text attorney David Nitka. Wow, okay, you got a full advertisement. Hey, you got enough hearts.
Yeah. Read out the number, right?
Sure. 310-776-5879. Again, 310-776-5879. I like it. Hi, Andrew. Yeah. Over the last 4 years, you often started the podcast by saying, I was going to cover this awful thing. However, Trump did something more horrible that I'm going to talk about. What are some of the missed topics that you thought warranted attention? Which topics will continue to be at issue for the next few years? That's a tough question, because I don't know that you and I can remember. You might be able to. I can't. There's definitely been stuff we didn't get back to that was like we had a whole thing and we just didn't.
Oh yeah,
I can't remember what.
So one of the things that I think virtually all of those fall under the category of terrible Supreme Court decisions, but there is a more obvious Supreme Court decision that I can point to, right? So, you know, there are a dozen cases that have undermined the concept of stare decisis. None of them as obvious as Janus versus Ask Me, right? So, and the slow, or I should not say the slow, the rapid unraveling of Chevron deference, right? Like there are a half dozen cases that have come up that I've looked at and I've been like, look, see, this is the blueprint, right? The reason they want to get rid of Chevron deference has nothing to do with anything other than having conservative judges be able to take a fresh look at rules they don't like, right? Because if they're conservative rules, they could just be like, oh, okay, well, fine. Yeah, we happen to agree with that. But you're going to see that particularly over the next 2-3 years as virtually everything Joe Biden does is going to get taken to the courts, right? Like we've already seen that with respect to a couple of executive orders that Biden has promulgated. So, so there's a lot of process stuff that we didn't get to I think we will get to. So,
you know, Alice brings up the Yodel Mountain Remembers bit I did.
Oh, that was so good.
This actually wouldn't be a bad time for that. Like this would be a perfect time for like, oh, did you see that a lawyer who knows Hunter Biden or something got appointed as whatever? And then it's just like, yeah, remember when Jared and Ivanka worked in the fucking White House the whole 4 years? Yodel Mountain remembers, you fucking assholes. That'll be the new segment.
There you go.
It is a good time for it. Here's a quickie we can do. Steve asks, has there ever been a Patreon name you refused to read or requested to be changed? No, the closest we got was that one dickweed who kept like talking about the like James Lindsay stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He and was I was like, we'll read it. I'll definitely insult you for it, but we'll read it. I mean, if you follow the fucking rules, you know, we don't read like certain curse words or something. We'll
just to summarize the show.
But yeah, that was the closest.
I am reminded of, I think it was an SNL parody, and I don't know if it was when Eddie Murphy was a cast member. And he was doing a rap album, so it must have been much later, in which I think it was when 911 is a joke came out, right? And so for, you know, all you history buffs out there. And so he's supposed to be a member of NWA, and the songs were increasingly like, kill my landlord, like Ed Smith, who lives at 35 Green Street, right? Anything that would be libelous against another human being, or that would, you know, incite imminent lawless violence, we might not read. But the one that came to mind was that dude who, ponied up his $5 and was like, everybody should go read James Lindsay.
Let's make a clarification, Dominic. When I said I'm not reading that, that wasn't that I wasn't reading the patron name. I think there was a patron who made their name, no, I'm not reading that.
Yeah.
Remember? So that was a joke. And then I might have said, I'm not going to read that about the bullshit book that James Lindsay and Helen whatever wrote. But I always read the patron names. We always read the names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they got mad. They got mad after three or 4 weeks, and we're like, well, you're not, you know, taking it serious. And it's like, no, we don't take it seriously, because it's went and reviewed.
Stupid.
Well, I will tell you that every time Aaron Rabinowitz gets into a fight with James Lindsay on Twitter, he'll tag us in, because Lindsay won't respond to Aaron because, you know, his platform's too small, but he will respond to us. And so I'll like retweet out or whatever it is.
He is so far down the rabbit hole now. I mean, he was a piece of shit for at least the last 7 years or 6 years, but he is full on like Jewish conspiracy stuff.
I'll
read his book about how wokeism is fuck off.
It was supposed to be a law. It was styled like a law review article. It will never be published in any law review.
Oh, what was? Sorry.
This thing that Lindsay was promoting that was like how wokeism is a religion under the law. Yeah. Right. And I copied and pasted it into Word just to know the word count. And it was 38 fucking thousand words long. It was purporting to be an analysis of why wokeism is a religion. And do you want to take a wild guess as to how many cases it cited?
Why would it cite cases?
It rhymes with bureau. Yeah, exactly. Like it wasn't even like the idiot's version of what a legal argument would be. It would be like the idiot's version of that. Like it was like, I read this and I was like, how does this person have anybody? Like Jordan Peterson, I at least get it, right? Like that guy is smart and erudite, right? And writes in a way. I mean, he's writing banal shit combined with horrible shit. Well, he's not doing anything right now, but like, I could at least kind of figure out like the appeal of Jordan Peterson in the abstract. The James Lindsay, like, here's somebody who just like sucks at life. Like,
he writes incredibly convoluted, smart sounding stuff that people are like, wow, he must be a genius if he uses all those big words and writes 38,000 of them.
It would be like me writing a 38,000 word takedown of like modern architecture and like never referring to a building, right? Like, I mean, it was just saying legally wokeism should be determined a religion, and so therefore,
I didn't catch this. Probably
under the
it was
First
38,000
Amendment,
words, I would never fucking read
and
that.
Probably because it was written by a fucking crazy person who has no idea what the law is, right?
Yeah,
like, Dunning-Kruger.
Hey, we got to do our lightning round. We're already behind on our lightning round.
All right.
So we're going to scroll down to the bottom. This is, I think we'd tackle this. Kevin Boyle asks, how does Congress decide which years the senators would need to be reelected? Well, that's pretty much set in stone ever since the, right? It's just every yeah, 6
Congress,
years.
But. Congress does not set that. Yeah, so in all, other words, each
that's
Senate.
That's in the Constitution, right?
Yep. Each Senate term must run for 6 years. And so they are staggered when you have, unlike, in Congress, you cannot have a, for the House of Representatives, you cannot have an interim appointee. For the Senate, you can, and that person is then appointed either to fill out the term of the person that expired or until the next special election. But in any event, that it the terms continue. That's why and here I'm going to screw it up again.
Yeah.
And that's why.
Yeah. Who's the senior senator? Ossoff's right? The senior senator. And Ossoff has to – wait, who has to run again in
– yeah, Ossoff has to run again in 2 years.
Okay.
Right? Because
no, – I thought Warnock – oh, shit. Nah,
yeah, I know. We
us.
Always screw this up. Somebody
I remember
tell
saying it
chat.
Was more important that Ossoff won, and I think that was because he doesn't have to run again for 6 years.
Yeah.
But I could – isn't that what I said?
It you could be. So,
who has
right.
to run again in 2 years? I think it's Warnock. That's we'll do a
Warnock
bet.
Warnock runs again in 2 years.
Well, according to one person in the chat, is that person right?
Yes. Yeah.
Someone check that
somebody,
person.
Somebody yeah. said a thing. We were like, yes,
hey,
done.
Hey, I
yes.
win. Also, yeah. I'm going to win our bet about Trump being – I'll give you 10-1 odds on Trump being
yeah.
not being
– They look, they, the two convicted. Of them ran together, right? Those were that was a, as joint a campaign as
yeah.
as I have ever seen. Yeah, yeah, Brett, that does not that is not remotely qualify as an Andrew was wrong. Plus,
oh, that's an Andrew was
wrong. there's no Andrew was wrong in Q&A.
Well, how about
man.
This?
These
we'll
are,
do it as a Thomas was right. Just
there
kidding.
We go.
Hey,
right.
look, AJ is a new patron, I think, and has been in the chat. Let's Woo! Answer AJ's question.
Love AJ.
And
thank you.
Andrew, give me your thoughts. In one of my cases, if a plaintiff train conductor sues his employer railroad company under FELA, I don't know what that is, for negligent infliction of emotional distress, if he had time to run away up a hill and then witness a derailment, was he in a zone of danger? Can I get a summary judgment for the railroad, or do you think the plaintiff would survive summary judgment? I don't understand any of that, but do you?
I do understand that. It is it's a great question. So remember, intentional infliction of emotional distress means that you must engage in extreme and outrageous conduct, and then that must cause the person who observes it, right? Resulting distress, right? And so the classic example is like you have the child hiding under the bed while the criminal dismembers the child's mother, right? Like that would be obviously murder as to the mother, but would be extreme intentional infliction of emotional
this
distress.
This was negligent infliction.
No, it was IIED. I thought it was.
Well, he said negligent infliction of emotional distress.
Oh, NIED. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
NIED.
Then. All
he
right.
had time to run away up. So it's saying the fact that like something got there's a derailment and he still witnessed it. That's interesting.
Yeah. So here's what I would say.
Is AJ not in the chat anymore? I'm going to be super disappointed. I don't see.
Well,
him
maybe he'll
commenting.
Listen.
Damn. Sorry, AJ, if you're not here.
But in any event, one of the elements of the tort is that the victim must be in the zone of danger of the plaintiff, right? The plaintiff must be in the zone of danger of the defendant. In other words, it can't be a like long convoluted stream. We've talked about the Paul's Graf versus Long Island Railroad yeah. case, which is one of the classics in tort law of, you know, this huge kind of Rube Goldberg sort of confluence of events. So in terms of if you could probably sounds like you could probably get an early summary judgment if you have an undisputed fact that the plaintiff was outside of any, you know, conceivable zone of danger. But
here's a quick one or a quick two. Tell me which one of these you like. What's your favorite legal loophole? Oh, hold on. I better read the patron names. I heard a rumor that Ted Cruz pees his pants on purpose because he likes the one feeling against his legs. Ass.
Hey, what's your favorite legal loophole? Some people are saying that.
David Bax Spino Breaker asks, what's the weirdest law you found on the books? Either of those, one or both. What do you got, anything?
Yeah, I am. I'll do both. So, weird laws, like I tend not to be a big collector of those because they tend to be things to that like fill gaps, right? So we pointed out, for example, in the last Trump COVID relief bill that it deleted the protection for Woodsy the Owl. Mm. And so, like, you might otherwise say, boy, you know, that 18 USC 702A, I think it was, that made it a federal crime to use the likeness of Woodsy the Owl seemed like, you know, kind of a goofball law. But almost all those ones that seem that way are like filling in a gap that was otherwise intended, right? Like, you need to have some kind of punishment when you say we're going to create this exclusive federal character. You need to be like, all right, well, and if, you know, you are out there trying to make money off Woodsy the Owl merch, we're going to stop it, right? Very few people get prosecuted under the Woodsy the Owl law, I'm sure. And I bet that Trump has a, like, you know, secret sweatshop producing Woodsy the Owl merch, that's why he inserted that provision. So that's kind of like goofball laws. Best legal loophole. That's a tough one, right? Like I mean, you know, my initial go-to is anything that has a statutory deadline, right? Like, and
my favorite one is the, Hall and Oates. No, what's that?
Hall and Oates. Yeah,
not Hall and Oates. It's Garfunkel and Oates. Is that?
Oh, that loophole. Yeah.
I didn't think you'd ever get that. Okay,
oh, I do not. Yeah.
I was just gonna say that and leave it there. That's my favorite loophole.
that's a good one. We'll leave that one there.
We'll go Google's out on this. I can't believe we're out of time, but let's. Let's go out on this general contact unit problem, child. Do you think American democracy will survive the next Republican administration? Genuinely, I don't know. I don't want to be hyperbolic, but like, what do you think? We're so close. We came so close already to just everything being broken.
There are a lot of negative outcomes, right? Like it is not hard to imagine an obstructionist Congress and the Republicans sort of retaking both the Senate and the House in 2022, and literally like Joe Biden and the courts overturning 75% of Joe Biden's executive orders, and then somebody running from the moderately crazy wing of the Republican Party being like, oh, look. I'm not saying that everything QAnon says is wrong, but like, you know, sure, they go too far in a couple of cases, right? So not Ted Cruz or Josh Hawley, but like, I don't know, Nikki Haley is the Republican nominee in 2024. And then, that's a long way of saying like, it really is incumbent on Joe Biden to rebuild as many of our institutions as we can as quickly as possible. And it's why we've, you know,
I think it really depends on how you define American democracy, because you can make an argument that we don't really have it, but we got lucky. I mean, I spelled out the math. 40,000 votes would have meant Trump would – let me ask you this, Andrew. Again, it depends on how you define it. I know there's a lot of different elections in this country. There's a lot to it. But let's picture those 20,000 people flip their votes or 40,000 people didn't show up for Biden and Trump wins despite losing by 8 million votes.
Yeah.
Would you say that that's democracy? Would you say that democracy survived in that case?
So,
because I wouldn't.
I guess I'm using it a little differently than you do, right? Like I have no, and again, we're
given
both,
that, what we talked about earlier too. Yeah,
so,
go ahead.
But no, I mean, let me say this, right? So in the abstract, we are both strongly opposed to the Electoral College, right? It's stupid and it reifies the power of, you know, racists in garbage, unpopulated states. And right. But I will say this, what the rule of law requires, right? So not democracy, but yeah, the rule of law writ large requires that the rules be known and agreed upon in advance, right? So I could see a situation in which you would say, despite like losing a popular vote, we are nevertheless like, nevertheless, this person is legitimately president, right? So I guess my concern is not so much that the next Republican that gets elected with a minority of the American public, that means democracy is lost, but much more like the values that I think are inherent in democracy that are worth protecting, right? And that includes, right, the rule of law, basic principles of fairness and decency.
We could lose our democracy and still have something like a rule of law, I think.
I think that's right. I agree. I think you've given a better answer than I have.
Not a binary. It's a spectrum. And I'm very concerned about the death spiral of democracy. It might start slow, but part of that process, based on reading people who have witnessed this, is part of that process is feeling like your vote doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And we get closer and closer to that every day, especially if Trump had – imagine if Trump had won 40,000 votes. That's the only difference. Yeah. Imagine if he had won. How all this energy that we had, everything we thought we were accomplishing, turned to nothing. That starts the death spiral because then people don't try anymore, and then they don't fight as much because they can't. So that, and then it gets worse, and then that allows him to consolidate power and or whoever to make it even harder in the future, which reinforces that spiral. And we were somewhere on that spectrum is all I'm saying. I'm not saying we were, you know, all the way to the other side or anything, but we were somewhere and beating Trump really did put a meaningful stall on that, but it doesn't mean it's fixed forever.
I could not say it better myself. So well, it's a perfect one to go out.
I can't remember, Andrew, and it's okay. Did you have time to hop on my game stream? I invited you, but I can't remember if you had a schedule conflict or not.
So I can come on for the next half an hour or so. I have I have a stereo Q&A with AG at 8 o'clock.
Oh, right. Okay.
But I can definitely hang out for a little while.
We'll be competitors. That's okay.
Well, but here's the secret. We have 308 people now. If each and every one of you come to the OA Q&A.
Yeah. Right, tomorrow.
Which is tomorrow.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Get on. It's 8 p.m. Get on. Like we have these contests going back and forth, right? Like, look, we're not hiding the ball from you on this, right? Like Stereo, big supporter of the show, running ads, helps make it possible for us to get this to you. But like we love doing it. And the more people we get on, the better we do in the contests and the more ad money they throw at us. So
if you're going to do one thing, come to our Stereo Q&A tomorrow. That's at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Yep.
I'm seeing a European person wishing we were doing it earlier. Sorry.
I wish.
There's so many conflicts. Everybody else needs it later. So this is, it's hard. It doesn't work for everybody. So Stereo app, grab that. Come do it. But right. Andrew says he's going to come hang for some Zelda Second Quest. So that's twitch.tv/SRSNess. I had recently changed the URL.
I love that you got that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if that – will that work? Yeah, that should work, right? Twitch.tv cool. site. Yeah. Well, click on that. If you want to come, we're going to do some – we'll take some leftover – maybe we'll argue about democracy and stuff. But either way, make sure to come to our Stereo Q&A tomorrow on that Stereo app. It's going to be a ton of fun. And again, we've already kind of done this today. If the questions are great, we will do deeper dives on them. And by we, I mean Andrew and sounds like Morgan as well.
Love it.
So thanks
so much. Thank you all so much.
Thanks so much, everybody. We'll see you whenever.